Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Gulbranson.
Welcome back. It is a Thursday. This is Silver and Black Today, brought to you by our good friends, Sam and Ashley Injury Attorneys, 702-820-1234. Call them anytime, 24 hours a day, because you deserve what's right. Thanks for joining us, Raider Nation. This is Scott Gulbranson. We got a lot to get to today. Of course, Raiders news in football and outside of football, which we'll get to in a second. We also take your calls. We like to have this program as interactive as possible, so you're part of it. 702-365-9200 is the Raider Nation radio listener hotline. You can call us there. You can also text us on the Sam and Ash text line. You text 69187, the letters R&R for Raider Nation Radio, your question and your name, and we will get it on the air. Scott Gulbranson again back with you. My special guest co-host today is none other than the host of the very popular Raiders podcast, Just Pod Baby. That is one Mr. Evan Grote. Evan, how you doing on this Thursday, man?
I'm doing well, Scott. Thanks for having me on today with as the guest co-host. I'm always excited to hop on here with you and talk some more Raiders football.
Yeah, we got a lot to get to, man. And it's interesting because the biggest Raiders news today, Evan, has zero to do with football. And if you haven't heard, breaking this afternoon was that Mark Davis, the owner of the Las Vegas Raiders, has now made an agreement to purchase the Las Vegas Aces of the WNBA. Davis, of course, has been a notable fan of the team during his time in Las Vegas, often spotted courtside. He would sit right next to the court. He bought a bunch of tickets. He also, in 2019, bought huge amounts of tickets to give to underprivileged children in the area, around 2,000 tickets, actually, to give to kids who might not afford to but could go and see a professional game. Of course, the Aces are led by first overall selection in the 2020 NBA draft, and that's league MVP Asia Wilson. The Aces this year made it to the WNBA Finals, where they were swept by the Seattle Storm. And of course, the team, Evan, you remember this name, is coached by former NBA great Bill Laimbeer. So Mark Davis, a lot of people out there are always saying that he's cash poor and he's broke. He went out and he bought a WNBA team.
Yeah, apparently he's got deeper pockets than we all think. And yeah, of course, I am familiar with Bill Laimbeer, a part of those bad boy teams with the Pistons back in the 90s. So that's pretty cool. You know, and I think it's a great thing for just for the whole city of Las Vegas. Anybody who thought that Mark Davis was going to come in here and not be fully bought into the city, I think you're mistaken. This is just another example of that. He is completely, again, just all in on the city of Las Vegas. And I think if you're a resident of Las Vegas and Nevada, you got to be thrilled that a guy like Davis is coming in and just doing so much for the city.
Yeah, and the official statement released today from the Raiders and from MGM and, of course, the Aces, Davis said, quote, "I'm excited to announce that I've entered into an agreement to purchase the Las Vegas franchise and the WNBA from MGM Resorts International." And he then say, or I should say, MGM confirmed the purchase. Of course, it's awaiting the NBA Board of Governors approval, and I'm sure Mark Davis will have a say on it later. And again, I'm not a WNBA fan. I'm not really an NBA fan all that much. I just don't watch it that much. The game has changed a lot, not to take any away from the talent that's in that league. It's just not my cup of tea right now. But I will tell you that the Aces have done a great job here in the community in Las Vegas, which obviously fits in with the mission statement of the Raiders and what they do in the community. And then Mark Davis and Al Davis, both big women's basketball fans, and they have been for a long time. And it's good for professional sports in Las Vegas. And again, no, Mark Davis not Stan Kroenke when it comes to self-worth or personal worth. I'm not saying that buying a WNBA team is like going out and getting a Major League Baseball team. It's a different stratus when it comes to the amount of money involved. But to your point, Evan, I think it's a great point, which is that this team This owner now of the Aces, Mark Davis, they're committed to the community. And women's sports, you know, not a lot of men don't tend to plug into the WNBA, but here in Las Vegas, the team has done very, very well, not only on the court, but off the court, involving themselves in the community, giving especially girls in the area something to look towards, and that is a really special thing. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes and what Mark Davis does. And, you know, this week too, Evan, so used to that, is the fact that, you know, there's been talk around the country about the NBA expanding. And Seattle is kind of a shoe-in given to for them to get a team back. They're building a new arena for their hockey team, the Kraken, which will also house an NBA team should they be awarded one. And then Las Vegas and Kansas City are the other two cities that are kind of in the running, if you will, at least early on right now with the NBA looking at expansion. And so you have to wonder, too, does the sale of the WNBA team, my colleague over on ESPN Radio here in Las Vegas, Tyler Bischoff, asked this question on Twitter. He said, does this make it more likely that the NBA might come to Las Vegas, or does this make it less likely because MGM is getting out? I think, Evan, that Las Vegas is in this period of time where it is a jewel for folks, despite COVID, despite the fact that our economy has really struggled during all of this. You have the T-Mobile Arena all set where the Golden Knights play. You have the NHL has done so well here. The Raiders are here and they're doing well, despite the fact that no fans were allowed this year. So you got to wonder if this means that maybe even Mark Davis would put together a group to lure the NBA here. But it's certainly exciting, and the NBA is looking to grow. They need to create more revenue, especially coming off this year where they had very little.
Yeah, I think, you know, to me, it's kind of mind-boggling really that it took this long for professional sports teams to get out into that Las Vegas market. I mean, to me, it's just a great place to have professional sports, and I know the concerns that were out there all these past years, but I think when you look at the success that the Golden Knights have had, and now the Raiders, and of course, they weren't able to have fans there this year, but I think hopefully next year when we do see fans in the stands, I think you're going to see how big the NFL will be out there in Vegas. I don't see why anyone would hesitate to want to get Las Vegas a professional basketball team as well.
Yeah, rising tides lift all boats. And of course, Las Vegas has the history with the NBA, with the Summer League and all of that stuff. So that's it. We're going to go out on the phones. Coming up, by the way, in just a minute, we're going to have a special guest we added late today. That is Alan Snell from LVSportsBiz.com. He's the man who covers sports business throughout Las Vegas, all of the sports, including college sports and professional sports. We're going to have him on in a minute. He covers the Aces extensively and knows that organization well. So we'll talk to him about that in a minute. But first, we go out on the Raider Nation Radio Hotline, and we bring in Raider Dave. Raider Dave, you're on with Scott and Evan. How's it going, man?
There. Sorry, hey, I didn't hear anything for a little bit.
There you are.
We're good to go now. Good. Hey, I wanted to contrast Bradley's team when he came in to be the DC in Sandy and for the Chargers versus mm-hmm. what he's going to inherit here. No doubt that over half of the players were third year and newer. But without a Joey Bosa here with the Raiders, what do you guys think his challenges are going to be? And with the, I mean, actually, his defense degraded each of the 3 years he was there, from 3 to 6 to 10 or somewhere around there. Still top 10 defense, which would be a great improvement for the Raiders. But where do you think his challenge is versus the type of personnel he had there versus here when he first got the job?
Yeah, Dave, it's a great question, and what I would do too is go back if you can and listen to our interview with Gilbert Manzano yesterday. He covers the Chargers at the Orange County Register. Really insightful stuff there. But I'll answer your question, and I'll let Evan chime in too. Number one, I think his challenge is what you said, is he needs better players. And so that's going to be incumbent on John Gruden and Mike Mayock to go out and get him some dogs. He needs, I think, a veteran player up front to come in and be able to rush from the edge. And I like Max Crosby. Max Crosby is not a first-round draft pick. He's not a Leonard Williams. He's not one of these guys. He can be a very good player, and I think he will be. But I think he needs that. You talked about Joey Bosa. Yeah.
What? Why do you think veteran there at that level versus veteran at linebacker or safety?
Well, let me finish, though. So I think that you need a veteran on the front end, on the front side, at the edge, preferably, or in the inside, too, or both. And then I think you need a veteran in the backfield, too. I think you need a veteran safety or a cornerback. I think you need a veteran in both spots to help turn around. Because I will say this, Dave, and I said it yesterday on this show. With the defense, they can't wait 3 years to turn it around. It has to be turned quickly. I'm not saying going from where they're at now to being a top 10 defense by next year. I don't think that's possible. I don't think it will happen. But if they can become a middle-of-the-road defense by getting a veteran up front, a veteran on the back end, fill in some spots with some young talent if you have that draft capital there, to me, that's what you need to do. And then number two is the talent you do have there. You need to find out exactly, is Jonathan Abram everything you thought he was? If he is, great, then you better coach the hell out of him and get him up to where he needs to be. You need to have Damon Arnett.
The other question is, how good do these guys play in his cover three scheme? I mean, that puts a lot of pressure on the middle linebacker to be able to drop back in coverage and or play, covering the quarterback, a spy. So
go ahead. Corey Littleton, I think, can do that. I think if you ask him and you put him in the right role, he said it himself at the post-season press conference, Dave, that, you know what? I had a bad season. He did. He was asked to do things that he shouldn't do. And I think that's the challenge for Gus Bradley, is to look at the guys he has and use them properly. I don't think they've been used properly. Now, if they're used properly and we see they can't get it done, then that's a different problem. Then you got to go out and get those guys. So I'm not saying.
Does that mean the green dot goes to the middle linebacker, which would be Littleton, which I don't think is something he's used to being the leader there?
Yeah, I think that's one of the questions and one of the things he's got to answer. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think it's not a slam dunk. Defensive ends available where the Raiders could reach than linebackers. I could be wrong, but I think that of the two positions this year, obviously defensive end is a big deal, but I think they could land a defensive end if they want to move up even a couple positions. I don't know if Mick Parsons will be around or not, but you're right about Littleton. So I could see them possibly going to the draft for a defensive end instead of cashing in big time. Unless, of course, they can, trade Brown for Miller or something like that, veteran-wise.
Yeah, and I think there's some players in the draft, even at linebacker. I mean, you look at Koromoa from Notre Dame is one of my favorites. That's a guy that they could look at in the first round if they go there. But I think they're going to be really active, Dave, in free agency and maybe even the trade market to go get a couple of those guys. Because you're absolutely right. Bradley can come in. He could be the best coach ever. If you don't have the dogs up front, if you don't have the to get it done, it doesn't matter how good of a coach you are. So they got to go and do it. So I hope I answered your question there, man. Always a great call. I appreciate that.
Scott, I thought you touched on something really important there. You talked about Bradley doesn't have 3 years to get this defense turned around. I think there's a lot of pressure on him. This offense, we've talked a lot about it. The offense is a top 10 offense in points scored. This offense can go to the playoffs. Is the defense going to be ready next year? When you look back at his time in Seattle, that was built over a three-year period. They brought in a lot of guys through the draft. I don't think the fan base is going to be that patient. As a fan myself, I don't know if I can tolerate another season of 8-8 next year. I'm expecting...
No.
Some talent to be brought in and for this defense to be fixed. Again, not to the top 10 level, but can we go from 30th in scoring to maybe 22nd in scoring and get into the playoffs? That's what I'm looking for. And there's a lot of pressure on him to get it done.
Right, and that's why I mentioned like Koromoa from Notre Dame as a possibility. If they can go up and get some guys up front in free agency or via trade, and then you could build that linebacking core. A guy like Koromoa, he plays in a base 4-3. He's a will linebacker. He's a three down defender. He can even move into box safety in certain packages. Of course, Bradley doesn't blitz a lot, which is what Kermora is really great at too. So we'll have to see. But great questions there by Dave. All right, we're going to get back to football in a minute, folks. But first, of course, the breaking news today was Mark Davis has purchased the WNBA's Las Vegas Aces. And when it comes to Aces, when it comes to Las Vegas sports business, there's one source that you go to when anything breaks. And that, of course, is my good friend Alan Snell from LVSportsBiz.com, who's with us to talk about this news today. And Alan, thanks for being with us here on Silver and Black today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, Scott. It's great to be with you.
All right. So, Alan, you mean you've covered this team since it came to Las Vegas and all of its color with Bill Laimbeer as the head coach. But Mark Davis jumping in, Mark Davis has been a massive supporter of the Las Vegas Aces in the WNBA since he arrived in Las Vegas. Not only does he have his own courtside seats, but he's purchased seats for kids here in town. Does the move for him to buy this team and for MGM to sell the team, was that surprising to you at all? And kind of what was the genesis of that from what you hear?
You know, that was a really, I thought it was an interesting transaction. Keep in mind, the individual who really made the deal happen was Jim Murren, MGM Resorts' former CEO. He was a huge, huge fan, and it was a big, big goal of his to acquire a WNBA property. Obviously, he was also talking a lot with Adam Silver at the NBA. He had Silver's ear chatting away every time Silver would come to Las Vegas, especially for the annual NBA Summer League. They would get together, and it was obvious. I mean, MGM Resorts, you know, wanted an NBA team because they need more programming for the building, you know, for the arena. They have the the Golden Knights, and they do have the UFC events, but they wanted another 45, 50 dates for NBA. So it was a big deal, you know, for me, for MGM Resorts to unload the property and have Mark Davis buy it. Was kind of a significant, interesting thing. Keep in mind, you're talking about two different kind of business models. MGM Resorts obviously answers to shareholders. They have they have their quarterly meetings, and you know, obviously, with no fans, the Aces naturally lost some money this past year. And then you have Mark Davis, who did really well with the move and the transition to Las Vegas. As you know, he hit the jackpot with personal license revenues, I think hitting around $550 million. And as you know, Scott, he also did really well with the corporate sponsorship deals for the building as well. You know, so he had all those founding partners. He does have some cash. And like you mentioned, he is a huge, huge fan. I think he's genuinely really loves the WNBA. And Las Vegas is a really intriguing market in the WNBA. They're close enough to Los Angeles to draw the LeBron James and R.I.P. Kobe Bryant as well. You know, he would come with his daughter, and other NBA players would come. I think Chris Paul made a few appearances. So, you know, Las Vegas is they kind of punch above their playing weight when it comes to the WNBA franchise. And it'll be very interesting to see if, you know, the NBA is kind of lurking about as well. That's kind of an interesting thing. So I'm very curious to see if Mark Davis maybe attracts any partners to try to leverage this into an NBA deal as well, since that seems to be the hot topic these days.
Yeah, and Alan, that was one of my kind of takeaways when the WNBA team moved here from San Antonio. To me, I thought it was, wow, this is a brilliant move by MGM and Murren to look at the opportunity to say, hey, listen to the NBA. We're going to get the WNBA out here, show you that we can do that here. We can start a relationship with the league and really show you what we can do. It also gave MGM the opportunity, like you said, to fill dates in an arena. And this time they're playing where? At Mandalay Bay. But at the same time, it was a testing ground. And from your indication and the people you talked to with the NBA, Is the MGM divulging themselves of the team? Does that kind of take them out of the running or of the conversation of perhaps being offered or involved in ownership of an NBA team moving forward?
I don't think necessarily. You know, I don't have any confirmation on that, but MGM Resorts' tentacles in the sports business world kind of extend in every direction. Don't forget they have the BetMGM interest.
It's huge, and, yeah.
It's, you know, and they, I just get back to the arena. I mean, it's all about generating revenue. Listen, I mean, they have a mortgage. They're paying debt on that building just like anyone else does, just like anyone paying a mortgage off. So they need, I would say this. I would think that they would want a tenant for that building. And if they have a partnership in the team,
that's fine, but it's not like do or die on the partnership deal. I mean, I think what's really driving the bus is getting the building filled and getting bodies in that building again, I mean, especially in the once this COVID stuff ends.
Yeah, again, Alan Snell from lvsportsbiz.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at lvsportsbiz. And Alan, you mentioned, and this is something I talked about earlier today too, which is, so Mark Davis buys this team. And yes, he's not Stan Kroenke. He doesn't have that kind of money, but it certainly dispels some of the rumors that Mark Davis is broke, because there's some people who do that. Now, Mark Davis, as he's moved this team to Las Vegas, the Raiders, that is, and like you said so well, with all these corporate deals, with the personal seat licenses, doing better than they thought, you're right. He could put himself in the position to at least maybe put together a group to bring the NBA here. Do we know the cost, if Mark Davis was going to do that? What's the cost, or the rumored cost, of the NBA I'm blanking now, Alan, help me.
The NBA fee.
Expansion.
Yeah, the expansion fee is going to be astronomical. Keep in mind, the NHL drew $500 million out of the Bill Foley group. And I would not be surprised if expansion fee is literally $1 billion. And plus, the team itself would be in the $2 to $2.5 billion value. I mean, it's NBA teams are expensive assets these days. You know, a really interesting connection is the owner of the Houston Astros. You know, you got Fertitta, the Houston Rockets, because of his
Fertitta.
Interest in the Golden Nugget, you know, and, you know, I think he had, I think the Houston purchase was around $2 billion. So this is going to be a really expensive deal. You're right about Mark Davis. I mean, the team wasn't making a ton of money, obviously, at the Oakland Alameda venue. He's kind of an everyday kind of guy. I mean, he's different, like you said, from the Kroenkes and the Arthur Blanks of the world. You know, I mean, he's not going to be throwing around billions of dollars, but he is going to be, I think he's going to be flush with cash now thanks to the personal seat licenses and the income from the corporate, partnerships at the stadium. So he is in good position. I mean, if you want to follow that narrative that maybe he might be interested in being part of an ownership group for NBA, I don't think that's necessarily out of the realm of possibility.
Well, and Alan, you go to all the games, you cover the games, you cover the players. Have you talked to anybody today and kind of what their level of excitement is, knowing that now they have an owner that's not a big corporate group, and that maybe there might be some changes there? I think with someone with an owner who has a passion for the sport, where it's not just about the dollars, of course, he's going to want to keep and get revenue as much as he can. But it's a different play, right? I mean, especially with a sport like this, where if you have a passion for it and you're willing to get creative and do promotions differently and maybe try to draw in some more fans, what might we see from a Mark Davis-owned team that we didn't see from the MGM-owned team?
You know, that's a really good question. I will say this. I don't expect a lot of changes out of the box, really. The one distinction in the WNBA, Scott, is that I think there were issues with the NBA teams and the owners of those teams also owning the WNBA team in their market, because there were complaints that those WNBA teams were kind of seen as kind of like the second-class citizenship, second-class citizen, if you will, in that market, you know, under the NBA team owner. MGM Resorts, I thought, you know, they did, I think, a pretty solid job backing the team. And also, don't forget, they actually poured in $10 million into renovating the Mandalay Bay Event Center, which also hosted the WNBA All-Star Game. So, you know, I think MGM Resorts, just from my perspective, was a pretty solid steward of the Aces. And they actually adopted some of the in-game personnel folks from the Vegas Golden Knights in terms of some of the in-game presentation stuff. You know, Big D, who was kind of he was a co-host at the Golden Knights arenas, he moved on to Nashville to a Nashville radio station. But, he was kind of like the arena host, if you will, for the Aces games. And, you know, they had a lot of high energy stuff going on. So, I'm really curious. I'd love to talk with Mark Davis about his vision for the Aces. I mean, that's to me, I've put my request in already, with good old Will Kiss, he said that after the WNBA, the governor's officially blessed the deal, hopefully Mark can kind of talk more openly about his vision. But, I think Mark will be a really good steward, and I think MGM Resorts was a good steward too. I can't really say, I will say the players were happy having MGM Resorts as their team owner. Sure. And, as you mentioned, Mark Davis, he's a really genuine lover of the WNBA product. As you mentioned, he had, courtside seats. He got the seats for the kids, and he was there. I mean, he would be hanging out with Jim Murren or Bill Hornbuckle, who's the current CEO, and, they're having a good old time.
Mark Davis has also been very public that he feels like the ladies deserve more money too. So it'll be interesting to see. But I agree with you. I think MGM did a great job because, you know what, more than anything, and as a player, as a coach, you want resources. And they went out and they built a winning roster. I mean, yeah, they got swept in the finals this year, but they were there. And so it wasn't like this team came in and they just kind of let it flounder and it was just an extra attraction for people coming to MGM Resorts. It was actually a product that they wanted to and they cared about. And they went out to win and build a winner. Of course, Asia Wilson at the top of the list there. Just great, great stuff. But if you want to follow this story, you want to know what's going on with anything related to sports business in Las Vegas, make sure you check out lvsportsbiz.com. And no one works harder than Mr. Alan Snell. Alan, thanks again, man. We'll have you on again real soon.
Scott, congratulations on what you're doing with the radio program, the radio show. I'm back at you because you've worked your ass off really from the get-go. We kind of hooked up very, very early on, even before the Raiders Stadium dirt was flying, and I'm really proud of the work that you've done. So congratulations on your job.
Yeah. I appreciate that. It means a lot for you, Alan. Take care, my friend.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
All right. That's Alan Snell, lvsportsbiz.com. Okay. We're going to take a break when we come back. We got a couple callers. We'll get on the air when we come back. Scott Gulbranson, Evan Grote, my co-host today here on Silver and Black Today only, right here on the home of Raider Nation, Raider Nation Radio.
As a nation, we stand together in solidarity. Laborers Union Local 872. Vegas strong, union proud.
From Stabler to Plunkett and Allen to Jacobs, we've got your Raiders covered on Silver and Black Today. Here are your hosts, Scott Gulbranson and Q Myers.
Scott Gulbranson and Evan Grote today here on Silver and Black Today, powered by our friend Salmon Ash Injury Attorneys. Check them out at samandashlaw.com because you deserve what's right. All right. We're going to get back out to the phone lines right now. We've got winners and losers from the world of sports coming up here in a minute, but we're getting out on the phones where we always get winners because we have great callers here. And first up is our good friend Brian in Henderson. Brian, you're on with Scott and Evan here on Silver and Black Today.
Hey, good afternoon, Scott and Evan. Glad that Evan's aboard today. Missed you as well. In regards to the purchase of the Aces, I love it. Scott talked to you briefly earlier last year that you and I went to UNLV around the same time. Me being a resident of Las Vegas now, but being from Southern California, I think it's a great move. I'm just kind of curious to know what it's going to bring for the Golden Knights Arena. Mm-hmm. Usually hockey and basketball usually share arenas. So with the NBA eventually coming here, and I know baseball is going to be here maybe eventually as well. The rumors that I was hearing are close to the South Point Hotel, but who knows where it's going to be. But just kind of curious on how that's going to be since now Mark Davis owns the Aces now. Also like to kind of pick you guys' idea in regards to just how the draft is going to be. I know we're kind of a couple months away from the draft, mm-hmm. but I just think that we should really look at the Terrell Williams situation and maybe keep him, because you can get a maybe a incentive-based contract from him, you know, and then you can go ahead and move on from Aguilar. Even though I'm a big Aguilar fan, being an SC fan, I think you can just save a lot more money. He already knows the system. He had a good rapport with Carr. I understand that he was injury prone. I understand that. But I think he should also maybe draft a receiver as well. You know?
Yeah, and we talked about it yesterday, Brian, and thanks for your call, man, as always. And at wide receiver, you know, Aguilar came in here, did a great, great job. And so my guess is, and we've heard reports, including from Hondo Carpenter yesterday, that they're negotiating. There's been some disputing what Hondo reported yesterday from other journalists. But nonetheless, we don't know how much it's going to cost to keep Nelson Aguilar. So you always have to have a plan B, right, Evan? So if that plan B, Terrell Williams, I like Terrell Williams. I think he could be a guy that, like you said, not at his current contract. That's not going to happen. They're gonna release him from that. But if he's willing to play for the Raiders, and he said he'd like to play for the Raiders, but if he's willing to do it at a contract level that gives them a chance to bring him in and compete, then I think so. But Evan, there's been some mock drafts already that have the Raiders taking a wide receiver in the first round. I could see that happening, but I don't know. I think they feel really good about what they have. If they can wrap up Aguilar, and then you have Bryan Edwards, you have Ruggs, you have Hunter Renfro, then you're just looking for maybe a couple other bodies. But to me, you know, they have so many other things to get done that I'm not sure where on the priority list wide receiver is.
Yeah, I heard you and Q talking yesterday about the possibility of going offense in first round. And my opinion on that is, unless it's an offensive tackle, let's say they decide to move on from Trent Brown, I think the only way I want to see them go offense is if it's a tackle, preferably that kid out of Northwestern, last name Slater. I'm not sure the first name, but he's the number one tackle in the class, I believe. And the reason why I say it has to be a tackle, because when you look at the top receivers that are in the class, the kid out of Alabama, Smith, he's going to be gone in the top five. Jamar Chase out of LSU, he should be gone within the top 10. And then you're looking at the third best wide receiver in the draft, and a guy like Jalen Waddle, who, you know, I don't know if he'll make it to the Raiders at 17. I just don't think it's a position of need right now. You already drafted two young guys last year. Give them a shot, and let's see what they can do next year.
That sounds good. One more call here before we get to winners and losers is our friend Gangster Raider. Gangster Raider, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's happening, y'all?
Doing well.
I just want to say, I want to talk about the defensive coordinator hire. I think it's a good hire, but I think it's a mistake if they're going to keep what's his name from Cowboys? It'll be Rob Marinelli. If we're going to keep him as defensive line coach, I think that's going to be a mistake, and it's going to set us back for a couple of years. And this offseason is very imperative for us to get it right, because that Los Angeles Chargers job is a good job. And if they get a decent head coach, say Eric Bieniemy takes that job, then we got to deal with Kansas City twice a year. We're going to have to deal with the Chargers, who would be like Kansas City 2.0, with Eric Bieniemy being the head coach and calling the plays. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's very imperative that we get this offseason right. We can't be cheap. We got to go after the best players. And like old boy was saying, I think we need to, if we don't draft the linebacker in the first round, it better be an offensive lineman. But it better be either a linebacker or a safety. If it's not one of those, it better be an offensive lineman or tackle. That's the only thing acceptable, because we need a linebacker or a safety. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Only thing offensive acceptable is a tackle. And we got to get this right, because we'd be the third best team in our division, you know what I'm saying, if we don't get it right. You know what I mean? So it's imperative that we do so. And plus, Gruden needs to step it up, because he almost lost twice to Lynn this year. And only good coach he beat was Peyton. You know what I'm saying? He lost to the Miami coach. He lost to the Atlanta coach. He beat Andy Reid, but then Andy Reid came back and beat him, you know what I'm saying? And even that rookie coach that ended up beating him, you know what I'm saying? So Gruden got to step up, and Carr needs to step up. You know, even though I think Carr reached his ceiling, I think if he uses skills more, his feet, and uses his arm downfield more, he can raise his ceiling a little higher. But we got to get this offseason right, or it's going to put us back at least 3 or 5 years. What y'all think?
Yeah, no, it's a great call, Gangster Raider, and I agree with you. I think, you know, we've been talking about on the show for weeks the fact that that offensive line is going to need help, because you don't know if Incognito's coming back and how reliable he's going to be from a health perspective, just naturally because of age. He's still a good player. He's still a good player, but with age, you just don't know. Guys can get hurt a lot more. Trent Brown is gone, in my view, and so you're going to have some holes up there. And that offense has gotten to a point where I think it's close to breaking out, to your point, if everything looks good. So you have to look at what you're going to do on offensive line. So there's a lot of priorities here, and I agree with you too. And Evan, I want to hear your point of view on this too, which is, I said it yesterday emphatically, that this is the year for the Raiders. They have got to turn the corner this year. There is no 8-8. Even 9-7 is not going to get it done in the AFC. You have got to turn this thing around quickly, and you don't have to have a top 10 defense. You have to have a middle of the road defense, but you have to have that offense shored up with the players that you need so you can go score. And you're right, Gangster Raider, about the division. The division's going to get a lot better. You have a quarterback now in Los Angeles with the Chargers. And yeah, he had a great rookie season. He's got to do it again, but he looks good. And if they get the right coach in there, like you said, offensive minded coach, they already have a pretty good defense that was banged up beyond belief this year. It's going to be tough, Evan.
Yeah, I think Gangster Raider was actually right on the money with his point he made about the Chargers job being an attractive one. And I hope a guy like Eric Bieniemy doesn't get that job, because he definitely is one of the hot candidates out there. He'll come from the Andy Reid coaching tree. And I think that would be a big problem for the Raiders, especially with that quarterback, Justin Herbert, there. And then you were talking about the fact that the Raiders, they got to win now, and I totally agree with you. And that's why I alluded to the point of, there's a lot of pressure on Gus Bradley coming into this situation. He's got to get this defense playing better real quick, and I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, fantastic call by Gangster Raider, Brian and Henderson as well. Thanks, you guys, for calling in. That opens up the phone line. 702-365-9200 is the number. But this is the time of the day where we're going to point out, in sports, there's always winners and losers.
In life and sports, not everyone gets it right. The line between brilliance and ignorance is a fine one, and Scott is here to call them out. It's time for today's winners and losers.
All right, we're not going to hold back now. Winners, since we got Evan as our special guest co-host. Evan, give me your winner. You there, Evan?
Sorry there. I had my mic muted there. Sorry about that. I got the kids upstairs and the dogs barking. You know, I try to keep it muted, but I'm sorry about that. My winner, I'm going with the Jacksonville Jaguars. They rolled out the red carpet today for Urban Meyer, and everything I'm seeing, I got the TV on right now. It sounds like they are deep in negotiations. It's imminent at this point. And I think it's a good hire. Should they get him to sign on the dotted line. This is a guy who has had success at every stop he's ever made at the college level, dating back to his early days with Bowling Green, where he came in. He immediately had success there and turned their program around. He went on to Utah and led them to a perfect 12-0 season and a Fiesta Bowl win in year two there. We know that he moved on to Florida, dominated the SEC and the entire country, really, for a few years, picked up two Natty championships along the way. And then after that, he had a little two-year hiatus, decided he wanted to come back. He wasn't finished. He wasn't finished with the college game. He wanted another challenge, took over the Ohio State and added another national championship there to his resume. So I just think this guy, he's proven that he can turn a program around. He can get it done at the highest level of the college ranks. All that being said, don't get me wrong. I understand the NFL is a completely different animal. And we've seen other great college coaches like Nick Saban and Steve Spurrier. Those are the guys that come to mind for me, who made that same jump and were not successful. But overall, I like the hire. He's got the first overall pick, and he's got 11 picks total in the draft, and he's got a heck of a lot of money to spend in free agency.
Yeah, that was also my winner of the day, too, because I'll tell you what, that franchise has just needed some good news, right? The Jaguars have been a joke, a laughingstock of the league for a long time. Yes, they had a little bit of run there. And of course, Gus Bradley was the head coach that kind of built up the defense there that eventually got them a game away from the Super Bowl. But I'll tell you, this franchise needed a face. This franchise needed someone to come in and get that market excited and get the current roster, the guys that they're going to keep on there. And of course, when Trevor Lawrence slips on that jersey, they needed a guy who who knows how to run an offense too. And Urban Meyer is certainly one of those guys. So yeah, I'm excited. It's also good for the NFL. You want to see these young up and coming coaches like Gangster Raider mentioned, Eric Bieniemy. You want to see those guys get jobs too. And Eric Bieniemy, I think, has interviewed for open jobs, so he'll get one of them, I would imagine. But it's also good to have Urban Meyer back in the game. Of course, he did have that end of his Ohio State run, a lot of issues there in Ohio State, and that's not necessarily something that's just closed off to the college ranks. So you know, in the professional ranks, I think he won't have any of those issues, and it's a good day, I think, if you're a Jacksonville Jaguar fan, for maybe all six of them. But nonetheless, that's good, and I think it's a winner for the day.
I got a question for you too.
Yeah.
Think about this for a second. I was watching ESPN just before we got on here today, and they're already speculating whether or not, if Urban does get the job, if Trevor Lawrence is still the surefire number one pick, or does he go with possibly Justin Fields because of the connection, the relationship with Ohio State? I think it's interesting. I don't think that should be even considered. I think Trevor Lawrence should be the pick, but I'm sure it's something that we're going to hear talked about in the coming weeks.
Yeah, it's natural, I think, for people to make that jump because of the Ohio State connection. But listen, and I like Justin Fields. I think Justin Fields can be a fine NFL quarterback with some development, but he is not Trevor Lawrence. I think Trevor Lawrence is the guy. I don't think he'll move out of that. I think that's a lot of us in the media creating stories because we got some months here before anything actually happened. But a good point nonetheless. All right, we're going on to losers. My loser, and it's a group of losers, and that is the Mark Davis is Broke group. Okay, so Mark Davis, of course, bought the Las Vegas Aces. And I'm not saying buying a WNBA team is like buying an NFL team. It's not or an NBA team. It's not in the same realm. It's not like it was a massive amount of cash. You're not talking $500 million like it cost to get the NHL's Golden Knights to Las Vegas by Bill Foley. I'm not saying that at all. But there's been a lot of bespurgement of Mark Davis saying that, he's got none of this, he's got none of that. And I'm not talking about, there's different stratus of NFL owners who have more. There's a lot more NFL owners that have more money than Mark Davis. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying, though, is that for all those people that kind of shine a light on Mark Davis as being kind of a useful tool, I think this shows that he's a community first guy. And I think that was number one. But I think number two, he's got a passion for the sport. And if you have an owner with a passion, then that's a good thing. So all those people out there who ride along and spend their whole day on Twitter just being negative about a person, about things, about whatever you're talking about in the world, this is definitely a loser day for them.
Yeah, I think you're right in the money there. I mean, listen, I'm not feeling sorry for any NFL owner. I'm a public school teacher, so we're talking about, you know, multi millions and even billions. So, you know, if you're owning an NFL team, you're doing okay. That's the way I see it.
Now, your loser stays on the basketball side. What do you got?
Yeah, we're going to stay on we've been talking basketball today. I'm going to stay on that. And this is a little outside my wheelhouse, but I'm going to go with Kyrie Irving. And I'll admit, I don't follow the NBA real close, but I do watch plenty of ESPN, and I'm online doing a lot of reading. I saw the blockbuster trade that went down yesterday with James Harden going to the Nets. He's teaming up with superstars Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving now. And from what I understand, I guess Kyrie Irving, he's been away from the team for a couple of days now. Apparently, he's frustrated with the organization a bit, with the hiring of Steve Nash as their coach this year. And supposedly, he's now unhappy that the trade for James Harden was not approved by him. And again, this was something that I saw several hours ago, so maybe things have changed now. So I apologize if I'm a little off by this. But, you know, I got a problem with this. First of all, I think the NBA has really been damaged by the creation of these super teams. And you know, it goes back to the Celtics when they brought in Ray Allen and Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. And then we saw LeBron do it with down in Miami with Wade and Bosch and the Warriors. For any Bay Area listeners we may have out there right now, they brought in Durant to team up with a team that was already very good, Curry and Clay and Draymond, of course. It goes on and on. And I'm just not a fan of it, to be honest. I think the superstars, the superstar players in the NBA have a little bit too much power. They just can demand trades whenever they want. And I think it hurts the league. But getting back to Kyrie, the nerve of this guy, he has two superstar players that the organization brought in along with him. He has a great opportunity here to win a championship with these guys. He should be thrilled that the organization is willing to go all in and bring in talent and spend the money and to help him be successful and to build a competitive team. And apparently he's forgotten about the days when he was with Cleveland, when he first came into the league before LeBron came back, when the Cavs were perennial losers. I just don't get it. And you know, put your ego aside and do what's best for the team. Figure out a way to make it work with these other superstars.
No, well said. And we talked a little bit about that yesterday with Harden and Harden's, you know, fit that he threw to get out of Houston. And look, I think the NBA, I credit the NBA players for taking much more control, right? I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You won't find me arguing that because it, you know, the league is built on their back, and I understand there's owners and all that kind of stuff. So I was okay with the NBA, you know, seeding much more power to the players, because I think, hey, they're the ones playing the game. They're the ones that put their bodies on the line and spend all the time, and it's their talent. And so I'm okay with that. But I do think there's limits to it, and I think this is where you're pushing up it against. So the great experiment that was the NBA of allowing it to be a quote-unquote player league is that now you have this. Now players think that they should be involved in all the decisions. And I'm not saying all of them, and it's, I don't know how widespread it is, but you're seeing it in examples like this. And to me, there's a natural barrier at some point where it's like, hey, dude, listen, you're our player. We love you. We'll give you whatever you need. We're here to pay you. We're here to listen to you. But you're not going to be involved in every decision. You know, what's next? Are you going to decide, well, I want to be a Coke facility, not a Pepsi facility? You know, I mean, it just gets into the realm of ridiculousness when that moves on. And you're seeing it a little bit in the NFL more. I mean, you see what happened with Deshaun Watson. I think that's a little more of a nuanced situation. But I agree with you. I think that what Kyrie Irving, and Kyrie Irving's got other issues too, we talked about yesterday. And I just think that there's a natural, hey, I'm going to push boundaries until I can't push them anymore. And certainly it looks like he's doing that a little bit. But, you know, hiring a coach and all that kind of stuff, that's one thing that's been happening since Michael Jordan and, of course, Kobe in L.A. and all that stuff. But to me, it's getting into some interesting territory. So I'm with you there. All right. Well, there you go. Winners and losers from the world of sports, some football related, at least a little bit with Mark Davis, and otherwise talking a little bit about basketball. It's time for a break. Evan and I will be back after this. We'll take your phone call, 702-365-9200. Still a lot of calls about the hiring of Gus Bradley. We'll talk to you about that. Also, a lot of talk about free agents. Who do you want to see on the Raiders? And also, coming up at 3:20, Q will join us for the Q-tip, where he'll tell you, just put number 52 out of your mind. You're listening to Silver and Black Today here on Raider Nation Radio.
If you believe Tom Brady did fumble and that Franco Harris didn't catch that pass and call it the Immaculate Deception, then you found the right place. This is Silver and Black Today on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Silver and Black Today, Raider Nation Radio, powered by our good friend Salmon Ash Injury Attorney, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's best. Scott, Evan with you here today on this Thursday, talking all things Raiders, talking all things sports, whatever is on your mind. 702-365-9200 is the number. Coming up after the top of the hour break, Danny Heifetz of The Ringer will be with us. We're going to preview the NFL playoff weekend division coming up. Evan, I'm just jazzed. I know your wife is, about this Baltimore-Buffalo game coming up this weekend on Saturday. Of course, the night game, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time. Your area, you live up in the Buffalo area, near the Buffalo area. People are fired up, aren't they?
Oh, I tell you, it's rubbing off on me a little bit. I got to admit, I'm not converting. Don't worry, guys. I'm still a Raiders fan, but it's hard. It's contagious. I mean, everywhere I go into work at school, and you know they're having Bills Fridays, and I go into grocery stores. You can't go anywhere and not just and see all the Bills paraphernalia, and there's all in. There's a lot of excitement here. I'm really looking forward to the game, and I hope they pull it off. I want to see him go all the way.
Yeah, it would be nice. And like I've said on this show,
anybody but the Chiefs.
There you go. I've said on this show many times, especially leading up to the game against the Bills this year, is that I've never had a negative interaction with a Bills fan. Like, I've just they always seem to be very good people. I'm sure there have been negative interactions.
I could tell you a few.
Too much.
Yeah, I could give you a few stories.
But that's good for domestic tranquility in your house too. If the Bills keep winning, your wife will be just in a great mood, and that's good for you.
That's right. That's true. Happy wife, happy life, as they say. And she's got my kids. My kids are buying in. I've tried hard to kind of convince them, kind of steer them towards the dark side with the Raiders. But they've wisened up, and they're young, but they're wise, and they're going with the Bills. So they've already had more success with their football team at ages 6 and 4 than I've had in 37 years. So.
Well, they're learning from dad, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Evan and I are going to be back here at the top of the break. And again, we'll be joined by Danny Heifetz of The Ringer. We're going to talk NFL playoffs here on Silver and Black Today, only on Raider Nation Radio. Finley Toyota.